Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where every week I keep you updated on the latest trends and how-tos in coworking. I owned and operated coworking spaces for 8 years and then served as the executive director of the Global Workspace Association for 5 years. And today I work with hundreds of operators and community managers every month, allowing me to bring you thought-provoking operator case studies and inspirational interviews with industry thought leaders to help you confidently stay on top of what's important and what you can apply to your own role in the coworking industry. Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast. This is your host, Jamie Russo. I have a guest today, Brandon Houston, who many of you may have met. He shows up at conferences. I know he's been to the Juicy Conference at least once, and we did not meet in person while we were there. And he has his community managers go through our Community Manager University program. So I really enjoy them. And I could tell that the Collingwood Foundry, which is a co-working community, not a co-working space, per Brandon's description, that it's a pretty special place. And I think I was proven right on that talking to Brandon and going through his Google reviews. So it was great to get his perspective and get a better understanding of how he sets the tone for the culture and how he's created such a special place. The Collingwood Foundry is in Collingwood, Ontario, and the population today is roughly 25,000 people. It's grown since the pandemic, and they have over 200 members. I think he said 220 plus, and they only have 4 private offices. So it's a great example. They have 7,000 feet. I think this is special sauce. Not everyone can recreate this, but Brandon has created a pretty special place with members that really value the community and the connections that are made in that co-working community. So he shares some great kind of perspective on how that has come to be. He did share a little bit, you know, on the air and off the air. He said, you know, he had taken a lease on a space as a business owner and had extra space and thought, you know, well, let's see if co-working will fly here and if I can cover some of the lease. And it's turned into something, you know, far more special than that. And now, again, 7,000 feet of community space. So you're going to enjoy this discussion. There are some really good nuggets in here, both sort of philosophical, and he throws out a couple of really useful nuggets that you might want to borrow. So without further ado, here is Brandon Houston, the founder of the Collingwood Foundry in Collingwood, Ontario. Brandon Houston, thank you for joining me today. Brandon is the founder at Collingwood Foundry in Collingwood, Ontario. In Canada, which is near Toronto. I was locating you on the map earlier. Pretty
yeah,
close to Toronto.
2 hours north.
Yeah, yep. And like right on the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right on Georgian Bay. Yeah.
Okay, so did you grow up there?
I did not. I've been here for almost 10 years now. I grew up actually closer to Detroit, Michigan in Ontario, close to Windsor.
Okay, got it. So Canadian, but...
Yes.
Not Collingwood. Yeah. Okay. How did you end up in Collingwood? Population 21,500-ish.
Yeah. To be honest, I ended up here because of a woman. That's what that's what brought me to the area.
Love.
Exactly.
Did she grow up there?
She did not. No, she moved here earlier than I did. And unfortunately, that story didn't last, but I fell in love with the community. So I stayed around.
Okay. You know what? Yes, I see that. And I want to set the stage. I don't always do this, but it's Google Business Month in the Community Manager University. And your community manager is in that group. And I was like, I wonder what Brandon's reviews are. And your space is beloved. The first review, I cannot say enough good about this space. I got introduced to the Collingwood Foundry community before I even knew it, knew I needed it. Since then, this place and the people in it have had an immeasurable impact on both my business and my life. Great people, great vibes, cool collaborations, tons of laughs, and delicious coffee too. Highly recommend it. The next one I have to read too. I love this place so much that I became a proud ambassador. This place has given me one of the greatest gifts as a new Collingwood resident, community in all caps. I highly recommend the space to anyone. Blah, blah, blah. A great space, sexy coffee. You have to tell us what's sexy about the coffee. I was like, I've never seen that adjective with coffee before. Anyway, so Collingwood must be special. You've fallen in love with it and stayed, and you've created a special place. I mean, we talk about that at our Google business training. Like, those are the kinds of reviews you want. You know, you don't people like, oh, it's a nice design and the internet's good. You want can I join? How do I get some of that? Okay. So move to Collingwood. Tell us your professional backstory and how did you get into co-working?
Yeah. So I've been an entrepreneur for 20 years now. My first business was a web development agency that I ran for 11 years before selling it. During that time, myself and two others started our first co-working space in 2011, which a lot of people didn't know co-working at that time, especially in a small community.
Those were early days. I mean, early days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very early days. Yeah. So we started our first co-working space then. So that's kind of where I dipped my toes into it. So the Foundry is my second co-working space. Left that other one behind when I moved out of that community and moved into Collingwood. And when I moved to Collingwood after selling my web agency, I acquired a video production company. And the Foundry came out of an idea of how can we better utilize our office space. We had a significant amount of office space that we weren't using. And I thought, you know what, I know the model. Let's throw open the doors. I don't know the community very well because I'd only been here for a few months. But let's throw open the doors and see if there is an interest in co-working in Collingwood. And to my surprise, there was. Our first member, Carl, who's actually still a member today, that was back in about 2017. He actually showed up asking for a job with my video production company, and I sold him a desk instead. So
nice move. I'm not going to pay you. You pay me and comfy.
And that happened with a few people, actually, but that was kind of what started the ball rolling and to see if there was a bit of a community here. Collingwood's got a pretty heavy density of creatives in this area. So a lot of writers and graphic designers and web developers. So they all just kind of after time gravitated towards the Foundry.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is Collingwood kind of a place, like, do people go there when they're kind of done with Toronto kind of thing? Or what's the vibe?
Yeah, more so now since the pandemic.
Yeah.
So we've seen a significant amount of growth. We're probably edging up towards 25 or 26,000 now. Mm-hmm. But prior to, what we're mostly known for is we're a ski community because we're right next door to Blue Mountain and several other, I think there's six in the area, private ski clubs. So we do attract a lot of people from the city that come up here on weekends, have weekend chalets, that sort of thing. And after, you know, a few years of spending time up here, a lot of people realize that they like the outdoor nature, they like the lifestyle, why not move up here and make it more permanent? And then when the pandemic happened, more people realized that they wanted out of the city and yeah, moved up to the Collingwood area.
Kane Wilmot lives in Collingwood part of the time.
He does.
Yeah,
he does. Yeah. I've gotten to know Kane a little bit. I'm actually a member at the F45 gym that his wife, Tanya, works at. So that's actually hilarious. How I met him originally.
They're both super fit. She's super fit. And yeah.
Absolutely.
That's hilarious. Okay. So that's what you do for workouts. Okay. So you had some experience in co-working, but you were like, I mean, did you wonder? You wondered obviously about the market a little bit. So how big is your space?
So we are at 7,000 square feet now. Wow. When we first started, we were a little over 4,000. We've actually expanded twice over the last few years.
Okay. Do you own or lease the building?
We lease. I would love to own it. That's not come to fruition yet. I'd say the building owners think it's worth a little more than I do, but I would love to at some point.
Someday, maybe your view of that will overlap. Okay. And then mostly open plan, not a lot of offices, 7,000 feet. Impressive.
Yeah. When we first started out, we were only open space. We didn't have any private offices in that 4,400 square feet that we had. We had two boardrooms and two call rooms, and the rest was all open desk space. When we expanded our second time, that was when we finally put four private offices in. So that's what we have now in the latest expansion.
Okay. Does this work because your members like don't need a lot of phone time?
Partly. I would say we did learn, so there's some growing pains there. We did learn that we needed some more than two call rooms. So we actually have 7 call rooms in the space. So our original 2, and then we've actually put some call booths in. So there's 2 different companies that we purchased booths from, and they're kind of spread throughout the space, including the one that I'm currently sitting in. So that need was there, but the majority of our members weren't interested in having their own private office space full time. They actually came here because of the community and the interaction that they're experiencing.
Okay. I love it. Okay. So the one you're in, which I've seen from, so Emily was in the community manager program for a long time. Yep. And then Megan's in there now. You make great hiring decisions. I can tell they're fantastic. I actually did a call with Emily when she was transitioning. She's like, oh, you know, I was like, I'll totally talk to you. You're so amazing.
Yeah.
Is this a prefab? Like what, you've got this like mossy green wall in there. What's going on?
Yeah. So this is one of the framery acoustic booths. It's fancy. It's considered the 4 person. I'd say it's 4 people if you're really comfortable with each other, but it seats 2 well. So it's a good one-on-one consultation booth.
Okay.
And then it's just a glass wall here. And then I worked with a local artist to do this moss wall installation. So it's just preserved moss, and it became kind of the showpiece of our first expansion on the main floor when we built it out.
Yeah, it looks great on Zoom. Okay, and do you podcast? What's with the fancy mic?
So I'd like to say yes. My intention and why I purchased all this equipment was to actually start a podcast a few years ago. That never came to be. It's still a spark in the back of my mind, and I've been working with a couple of others to potentially get that off the ground. But because I had all the equipment, we have this booth, which actually works quite well for recording. We lend out the equipment to members. We have a few that run their own podcasts.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So the equipment's available for members to borrow.
They can just pop in, reserve the space, and yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. I know. I didn't even have the like suspended mic. Yeah, my ceiling. I can't do that in here. Okay, so do you still own the video production company? What's your professional life look like today?
Yeah, so not any longer. What I've moved more into is I do a bit of consulting now for co-working spaces. I've worked with a few others now, mostly I would say rural, like suburban and rural co-working, not so much the urban co-working.
Yeah.
And it's really around community building and building out those spaces, working on potentially some other locations as well, because we've built out this Collingwood Foundry Collective, which
I want to hear about that.
Be a bit of a network. And then I'm also a counselor as of a year and a half ago for the town of Collingwood. So I'm a municipal counselor as well.
Wow. Wait, so that's like a political role? What did it tell? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm one of 9 that includes the mayor and the deputy mayor that runs the town.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Huh.
I'm interrupting for a second. Are you working on starting a co-working space? I often emphasize how important the planning stage is. You've heard me say most unrecoverable issues happen well before you open your doors, and they are related to the size of your space, your real estate deal, and a few other things. If you think you are going to pick your favorite co-working space and reverse engineer what you think you see happening in there, and then pick your own paint colors and your favorite furniture, you are in for a surprise. This business is really about making the right fundamental decisions that align with your individual personal and financial goals. So we want to help you avoid the mistakes that a lot of operators make in planning and launching that can really set you back in terms of time and finances. So we have got your back. We have created a free training to help you really get behind the 3 key decisions that we think are the most critical for you to get right when you're designing your co-working business. The model, not the colors, the model. And these insights come from years of operating, designing the model for 2 different locations, and then my work with hundreds of operators as they work on their businesses. So grab your spot in our training class. You can watch it anytime. It's totally on demand. And start your co-working journey with confidence and the right strategies in place. You can grab that training at everythingcoworking.com/masterclass.
Cool. You're super engaged.
Yes, I very quickly got involved in the community, like I did back in my hometown, being an entrepreneur for 20 years.
Yeah.
The first thing I did was go and meet everybody at the Business Development Center, local economic development office, join networking groups. So I became kind of entrenched in that ecosystem pretty quickly.
Nice. So you do, I am trying to think of what it is. I've seen it on Instagram. You write blog posts sometimes. And Megan was like, oh yeah, when Brandon does stuff, like people show up. Is there like a lunch that you do once a month or like, so yeah, what does your engagement in the co-working space look like? How much, you know, how much time do you spend on it? You've got your community is your team full time or are you just staffed part time?
So it's myself and Megan, and Megan is full time. Okay. And I spend the majority of my time here as well when I'm not in municipal meetings. So most of my time is spent at the Foundry, just really interacting with our members. One of the things we do on a regular basis that I think really helped drive some of the growth here is we run a weekly event called Common Ground. And it's a weekly Wednesday morning, 1 hour long entrepreneurial group that you don't need to be a member of the Foundry for. It's on our main floor, coffee's free, come for the conversation. It's really for people to come and support each other's businesses. And that's kind of acted as a bit of a funnel to drive membership into the co-working space.
And it's something you do every single Wednesday. It's like your signature event. Every Wednesday
is
bold.
Every Wednesday.
But easier than making waffles, though, probably.
Yes. It's a bit of work, but I really enjoy it. I really enjoy the community that's built around it. We put it on hold a couple times, but so much demand to bring it back. We brought it back this year because it was on hold for a couple months. Been running it pretty much since the Foundry opened. So in various capacities, that's probably the most popular event that we run. We do some other ones, pitch competitions twice a year for local businesses. Hmm. We do one called a 5x5, which is kind of like a mini TED Talk that we run at the local theater. And then we're involved in a bunch of other events on an occasional basis, partnering with the local business development center.
So I'm curious about, since you do some work with other spaces that are in smaller, you know, rural areas, mm-hmm. do you, like, I would guess that part of your success is like the community is fairly like entrepreneurial freelancers. And then there's you who's like probably pretty visible and kind of, you know, kind of a galvanizer, like a, you know, a sort of a central figure. Does that have to exist for success? Like what's your, Brian Watson's been on the podcast a couple of times. Do you know Brian from Proximity? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I mean, he's not Proximity anymore. And I think he just sold Altspace. He's like, I'm a couple chapters behind, but his video, probably both of them, at least the first one, I think he put it on his website, but it's by far like many, many, many times my most popular video. And I don't know if it's him or if it's the topic. So I'm just, you know, I'm curious because he had unstaffed spaces where, you know, no one was around, but in places where people need like good Wi-Fi and, you know, they might want to come together, but kind of a different model from what you're doing there. So I'm just curious kind of about your, like what you see and, or what other types of spaces you're working with and how's that working and sort of, is there any sort of like, mm-hmm. like layer for, you know, framework for success for those types of spaces?
Yeah, I think in a smaller community, it does take somebody that's a bit of a community ambassador or a bit of an advocate for the local entrepreneurial community. I know that's really what's worked well in this space as well as in my prior space. It kind of takes that, like my video production company was the anchor tenant, the first anchor tenant of this space.
Yeah. And I love that, by the way, because I think that's like such a valid way to start and to experiment. So
it really is, because that's one of the hardest things starting out a new space is that chicken and egg. It's like you want to build this co-working space, but how do you get people in if there's no people there, right? So you almost need to, and I've had this conversation with others, when you're starting a new space, it's almost good to pre-sell the concept so that you have two or three anchor companies or anchor tenants in the space from the get-go, so that there's already a bit of that community built out, because it is really hard when it's just you starting the space and you're sitting alone at a desk.
We can all remember. I mean, I remember those days and I started in 2012. That's a long time ago. And I can still literally remember that feeling of where is everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it takes someone to kind of, right, and the pre-selling. And yeah, we teach a lot of pre-selling in our startup school because exactly the chicken or egg issue. So I mean, are there other sort of like, if folks are listening who are in smaller communities and are trying to like validate the idea, because 20,000 is not a lot of, it's not tiny. I grew up in a town with more cows than people. So no co-working in my town. So it's not tiny, but it's not big. It's not a, maybe a no-brainer. What are sort of some of the key, like around education, around like, how do you validate and how do you know this thing's gonna work? How do you sort of remove some of the risk for people who are in smaller markets?
Yeah, I think, and actually one of the advantages that I think some of the co-working spaces in smaller markets has is it's much easier to develop relationships with your local economic development office, your local business development center, your local chamber of commerce. So that's actually a really easy way to validate if there might be a community there for it. But it also acts as a bit of a way to develop a referral network. So we have the business center that sends us referrals of people that move into the community. Somebody will come in the business center or say, you know, they're moving to Collingwood, they have a small business or they're just starting their business. One of the things they have asked in the past is, have you gone to the foundry yet? You need to stop in there and meet the people at the foundry.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a great way to drive some of that growth in a small town. And I think it's much more accessible to have access to those individuals in the government role than maybe it is in a larger urban center.
Yeah. I opened in Chicago and I was like, I'm not going to join the chamber because like it felt so huge and not, yeah, but in a smaller town. And right, sometimes those economic development groups are like really hungry for a resource like that, and it checks a box for them to say, right, have you checked out the foundry yet? Some of those support services you can get from that group. And I also love, so I don't know if Emily invented this, but your 28-day campaign in February, I'm always asking your team, like, can you please tell everyone else? Because it's such a good example, I think, of building relationships and a unique thing that you can do to build those relationships in a smaller market. Like again, in Chicago, it's like so noisy, right? Like in a big market, it's like just not the same to be able to cut through that. But you do this 28 days of business giveaways. So you get local businesses to donate something. And then I can't remember how it works, if there's tagging or drawings or whatever, but it's pretty incredible. A lot of work, but
Yeah, it is a bit of work. I started it actually during the pandemic when we went through that period of shutdown when all of our brick and mortar businesses were shut down. So it was a way that I've always been a big advocate of buy local, support local whenever you can, that sort of thing, which is actually, I think, where one of the references of the coffee comes from in that Google review. The sexy coffee. It's a local coffee roastery that we buy from because it's called Good Grief. That's the name of the coffee. Okay. It's phenomenal coffee. But I've always, so our coffee, our tea, our water filter that we have here is all local. Everything that we stock here, we try to, right down to the soap, we try to support local. So the 28 days of giveaways came out of this. How do we give back to the local community? How do we support them during this time where they're really having a challenging experience keeping their doors open when they can't have foot traffic coming in?
Yeah.
So because a lot of our business comes through word of mouth and referral, we don't spend a lot on marketing. I know that kind of goes against a lot of the advice of marketing, but we don't spend a lot. So the idea of 28 days was, well, I'm going to go around and I'm going to buy a $100 gift card from from 28 businesses. And we have people nominate the businesses over social media. So we don't pick them. The community picks them. And then I go around and buy $2,800 gift cards. And then one day each throughout February, we give a card away a day for that entire month. And we did it for 2 years, put it on hold for a year, and then brought it back this year again, which I guess it was 29 days this year. And yeah, we don't even ask them to donate it. We just go around. So $2,900 in marketing investment is the way that I look at it. And it helps out other community businesses.
Yeah. If anyone wants to steal this idea, you can find it on their Instagram. I love it. And I get it. You don't have a lot of marketing levers to pull. I mean, in a market of 25,000 people, you're not going to run Google ads. maybe Facebook ads. How did you, did people in your town know about co-working when you opened, or kind of what was the, you know, you mentioned, you know, these events, it draws people in, mm-hmm. but yeah, how did you sort of get that initial group of folks?
Yeah, I would say in 2017, the majority of the people that I ran into did understand what co-working was. And I think a lot of that was because they had come from Toronto. There were several co-working spaces throughout the city in Toronto. So it wasn't an obscure idea to a lot mm-hmm. of them. So, but really, I didn't really even sell it as a co-working space. I still don't. I actually try not to call it a co-working space if possible. I try to call it a co-working community because it's community first is the way that we focus on it. Even though we are butts in seats, it's really about the interaction that all of our members have with each other. And then it just became word of mouth referral. So one member mentioned it to somebody else in the creative sector that he's worked with and brought them in, and then another came in and another, and it just kind of grew from there. We're sitting as of today at 227 members, which for a town this size, I think is not bad.
It's totally not bad. I know Megan was like, so we're pretty full, you know, and everybody else on the call is like, how, you know?
Hey there, I'm jumping in again. This time, I'm speaking to those of you that are either getting ready to hire a community manager or who have a community manager and you would like to support their training and development. We know how challenging it can be for co-working space operators to create their own training and development material to support their community managers. And this is so important in terms of onboarding new community managers and supporting the growth of your existing community managers. And we're getting towards the end of the year. What a great holiday gift, end of year gift to give to your community manager. So the platform is really around a couple of things. One is access to a community of like-minded folks. We have a very active Slack group with really wonderful questions that are posed every single day. And we find that's one of the biggest values. We have community managers from all over the world. And this is an excellent group of community managers that have invested time and effort into getting better at that role. And they are the kind of folks that you want your community manager to be by and hanging out with, and they know their stuff. Or sometimes they don't, and they ask questions and we help them out. So I'm in the group. We have coaches that are in the group to support them. So we love when they ask questions for things they need help with, because the other aspect of the program is really around helping them get resources they need to make their jobs easier and to learn things that they can use in their role to be better at their job. So we provide some done-for-you resources like Google Business Posts, detailed event ideas, et cetera, that they can just kind of grab and go and use. And we also provide monthly resources that add to our training library. So they can do our certification. And then we have a lot of electives that help them kind of get better at all the things that go with the role. So our community managers wear a lot of hats. So we break our content into industry knowledge for new community managers, community building, operations, sales and marketing, and leadership. So the leadership bucket is great for our more advanced community managers. We also have virtual office and digital mail training and coffee training for anybody who needs to know how to use commercial coffee brewers. So we have some of the, I'm just going to give you kind of a sampling of content that we have. So in our community building modules, we have hosting your first member events, building community with budget-friendly events, member event swipe files, our sales and marketing modules. We have tour training. We have the training on the full co-working sales funnel so they understand what that looks like. We have social media planning frameworks. We have, what else do we have? 3 simple steps to an effective marketing newsletter. These are just some of our samples. Ooh, these are some of our best utilized topics. Demystifying the process of letting your co-working members use your address for their Google business listing. How to close a tour. Operations modules, how to set up automations, how to do a new member onboarding audit, simple ways to use AI to boost your productivity. We have over 40 courses in the program. So we cover kind of higher level topics, and then we also cover things that are timely, like the CMRA updates, Google Business updates, etc. So we get together monthly to do official training, and we also host a best practice sharing call, which is one of the fan favorites of the group and the Slack group. So if you have any questions at all about the program, don't hesitate to reach out. You can learn more and register at everythingcoworking.com/community-manager. Now back to our episode.
With all flex, I mean, I think I get really interested in, you know, sort of what that secret sauce looks like, because I don't think everybody can do that. I don't think everybody can create a co-working community, and not everybody wants to. I think it's pretty incredible to have 7,000 feet with four offices and to have 200 plus members. And you're obviously your reviews talk about exactly what you hoped and what your language, you know, is about as community. So
yeah, I think some of it comes from the values that I tried to instill in it. So at the beginning of Common Ground every week, when we run that event, one of the things that I say, we always set the intentions for the meeting. And one of the things that I say is this community is about net giving over networking. And yeah, what that means is you're coming here to support each other rather than just coming here to sell to each other. And I think that set a tone for everybody that walks into this space and everybody that becomes members, because it has become such a collaborative community that people have started businesses together out of the space. People have hired each other for projects. So it's this little ecosystem that has evolved that it makes me smile. It makes me happy to see when our members help each other out.
Yeah, but it's to your point, it's intentional, and you're being really consistent about sort of setting that tone and the culture. It doesn't happen by accident. Yeah, that's really...
For a while, I would say for a few years, I kind of took a step back and said, you know, I'm not the one that did this. Everybody that's in this space are the ones that have created this ecosystem. And I fully agree with that. It was setting those values from the outset, but everybody that steps in here really has that instilled in them as well, and continues to attract other people with those same values.
Yeah. So I'm curious, I mean, kind of back to the smaller market model, you have 7,000 feet that really cannot be unstaffed, but what's your view on sort of the unstaffed model? Is that, yeah, I'm just curious.
I think it can work. I think it can absolutely work. I do think it goes back to trying to find some key anchor tenants that act a bit of like ambassadors for the space, because I think the reason that most of our members are here is not just because they need a space to work. They're actually here to be around other people and have those interactions. And we saw that a lot over the last 2 years. Prior to 2020, we were mostly, I would say, almost 100% business owners and entrepreneurs. Now we're a mix of remote workers and entrepreneurs. And it's because those people that have been working from home want to be around other people. They want to have, you know, it's that water cooler talk. It's that social interaction. So much so that we do a member survey every year, and we ask, you know, what are we doing well? What would you like to see improved? What are you enjoying? And what do you want to see more of? And hands down, the majority of the responses we get are, we want more social events. We want to be able to, so we run Thirsty Thursdays every Thursday at 4:00. And it's really just a social for everybody to get together. We have a group that goes and does pickleball. We have a skiing group. Other members have created a Foundry WhatsApp group on their own so that members can get together and go skiing together and go hiking together. People just want to be around each other. So anybody that's starting a non-staff space, it's not impossible to do. I'd say it's fairly easy to do, but it's putting some key people in there as members to sort of drive that engagement and that growth.
Yeah. I love the phrase galvanizer. One of our community manager members use that term. And I, you know, that person who's not afraid to be like, I don't know everybody here, but let's go skiing, you know? Yeah, you need a so it doesn't have to be the owner or the a staff person, but yeah, it's kind of identifying who will those people be and how do you encourage that or put a few things in place to kind of support that.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've done that I think would work well in a in an unstaffed space is we have an ambassador program. And we have a few members that are part of that ambassador program, and they take a day a week to work the front desk. So while we have one full-time community manager, we have members that run their own businesses that a day a week actually help out with the front desk and do tours and help with some of the operational stuff. And in turn, they get a free 8-day a month membership. Okay. So it's something that I think you could probably do in an unstaffed space is find some of those key people that can be those ambassadors to help when there's not somebody there to actually work on the day-to-day.
Okay, so I'd love to hear a little bit about, I think I remember Emily saying, like, talking about the fact that she does not sit at the front desk all the time and that sometimes she would sit and sort of have time to work on things. Your team is all often like the most consistent attendees at our community manager calls. So I love that. And that's probably your leadership saying, look, you know, we're doing this. You should show up to these calls because some of them don't, you know, don't show up and some can't, right? Because, but I think I'd love to sort of hear your, you know, sort of, I don't know, your thinking, your approach to that, because I think sometimes it's challenging. The front desk can be really busy. You want your team like focused on, you know, doing the job. And so it doesn't create the space for them to sort of work on projects or, yeah, or do things like show up to our community manager calls. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about sort of that philosophy and how it plays out?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I look at it as a collaborative effort in combination with myself, our community manager, and our ambassadors. There's always, I'd say, two or three people that are there that can help somebody out if they need help with the printer, which is the bane of my existence. And
every place could have less staff if we didn't need to deal with the printer.
I know. Yeah. So it gives that space or that room for, you know, if I have to jump into a meeting or if Megan has to jump into a meeting, there is somebody there to pick up the slack. And I'm almost always there to pick up that slack if Megan has something that she needs to go do. So it's, you know, I think I started that from the beginning and we've just kind of operated that way going forward. When I first started the space, I didn't have a community manager. It was me. So it's actually, it lightens things actually now having these ambassadors and the community manager to be able to support each other. And it cuts down on the amount of day-to-day work that each individual has.
Yeah, I think it probably reduces burnout. It feels, you know, more supportive, more like a little bit of a collective effort. And not every owner can be present. I mean, some folks have multiple locations. They can't, you know, I totally get it. But I get a very sort of healthy sense from Emily and now Megan on, you know, how they view that role. So yeah, it's good for, I think it's good for others to sometimes hear like, you know, how do you manage that? How do you think about that? So okay, so you were recently in Moab. Tell us about your trip.
Yes, so I drove to Moab, Utah in my Jeep Wrangler. It was a 56-hour round-trip drive because in December, I decided to sign up for an 85-kilometer, 3-day stage race, trail race. So that's what I drove to Moab
on a bike?
For. No, running.
Running.
And
okay.
Running. Yeah. So through the desert and the mountains there, it's an event that's been running for 2 years now by an organization called Trans Rockies. It's so fun. It's such a fun event. It's a great community of people. So I decided to sign up in December. Probably should have signed up sooner than that because I'm not a runner. So 2 months to train was not a lot, but it was amazing. I'd never been to Utah before. So I made it a road trip.
Okay, and what, the race is 3 days long. Where do you go?
Yeah, each day was a different loop. So day one and three was a little over 20 kilometers, and day two was a little over 40 kilometers.
Wow, is that like a marathon?
It's the so 85 is the equivalent of two marathons.
Make me do the math. Yeah. Okay. Wow, incredible. Okay, did you find a co-working space in Moab?
I did not, no.
There's a, did you look or wasn't
I briefly looked, but my head was right in that race.
Totally. Yeah. You're like, I didn't do much else. I didn't do much else since. Yeah. So I wonder, maybe he's listening. There was a gentleman who reached out and we did some calls. He was in our community manager program for a little bit and he was in Moab and he owned a building and he wanted to do it on the second floor. And he said he gets a lot of like van lifers and people who are coming through and need a place to work. And so he may still be in progress on that. Who knows? But I was curious when you said that. Yeah. So would you do it again?
Definitely. I'm already considering signing up again.
Okay. Wow. And you went by yourself?
I did. Yeah. Solo trip, camped along the way. I love road trips, so it was an easy one for me to decide on.
Okay, very cool. I love it. And no GC for you this year?
I don't think so. Not going to be able to pull it off. Too many other things going on in both the municipal politics space and at the Foundry. We're looking at expanding to some other locations, so that's been what I've been focusing on lately.
Locations out of town?
Yeah, locations out of town. So we actually have, there is another location in Collingwood that is primarily private office. It's not owned by the Foundry. It's independent. So what we've done over the last few years is systemize and put processes in place and kind of package everything up that we run as the Foundry so that we can drop those processes and systems in place in other co-working spaces. So we've done that with another one in town here. And then we're looking at doing that at another location, potentially maybe two more. And the idea is to build it out as this Foundry collective. And the goal is to be able to connect a broader community of business owners and entrepreneurs and remote workers so that they can move between locations if they are visiting these other areas. And we also have a series of perks in the communities, partners with local businesses, that sort of thing.
Yep. Very cool. I know I am not sort of very mobile because I have a 12-year-old, but it's interesting, you know, how people like to move around these days. We have a member in Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is not maybe the most exciting place in the country. And she said she's shocked by how many like day passes and people kind of coming through and staying there for a while, like, yeah, on some sort of road trip or whatever. Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, let's wrap up with, you've been doing this for a while, since 2011. What are you most excited about right now in co-working? Ooh,
that is a great question. Actually, it's something that came out in an email from you today, I believe, and that is this whole concept around hospitality. So last year, I read a book called Unreasonable Hospitality, which has become, I think, my favorite book.
I know. I was looking because I have it on my, although I love the, did you do the audio version or did you read it?
No, I read it. I love holding a physical book in my hands. Yeah. So
it's
Will Gadara, yeah. I think is the author.
He narrated it. And I just love his, you know, you totally get like his personality and get the vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I think excites me, because even though the book focuses on it, you know, the restaurant industry, which is what we normally think of hospitality as, and you mentioned hotels, I think we have this opportunity as co-working spaces to instill hospitality into the things that we do here. And to me, what that looks like is making a connection for a member if they say that they have a need, or, you know, providing local coffee, or it's all about the little things that you can do that people will turn around and want to write really nice reviews on Google for.
For your sexy coffee and your community. Yeah. I do think, you know, I like your sort of culture is a good example of the community piece is both community and a form of hospitality, a form of like, we care, we want to connect you, we want to help you professionally, or it sounds like you have a lot of social connections that happen for people who want to, you know, pickleball together or ski together or whatever. But yeah, like being willing to be the ones who help facilitate that, or having an ambassador who does it, and just being intentional about that and setting up ways for, how do your members communicate? Do you have a Slack group or?
We do. Yeah. So we have Slack. We also have a discussion board. We use Nexodus as our platform to manage the space. Okay. So there's the discussion board there. Okay. Some use Slack, some don't. So we try to just be wherever they are. And if they choose to use that. So It's a fairly active community on Slack. We have a bunch of channels. I also go in and post local business support services, things like that. That's how they mainly interact outside of the space. And then in the space, obviously, it's meetings and running into each other in the kitchen. Yeah. And yeah,
the good face-to-face mojo that one gets from, yeah, showing up at a
Co-working. And we run, so on Slack, we run Donut. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Donut plugin.
No.
So it's a lot of fun. It's what it does is members can choose to join the Donut group. And once a week, it'll pair you up with another random member for you to go for a real life coffee together and just have a conversation. And it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun.
I love that because it sort of takes the like asking someone out, you know, thing out of it. Like, well, yep. They said we should. Let's go. Yeah.
Yep.
Huh. Okay. That's a good tip. That's a great.
Yeah.
Nugget.
And sometimes they just sit and have a coffee together on the couch. Sometimes they go to the coffee shop across the road, which we have a great relationship with. Yeah.
Okay. I love that idea. I might have to use that one. Okay. We are out of time. Brandon, thank you. It was great to meet you. We've been in the same room before and have not like connected. And I feel like, you know, you're active in the Facebook group. And I love that you put your team in the Community Manager University and have just been really curious about your story. And I mean, what you're doing is pretty incredible in a small market. So I think there's a lot to learn. And I appreciate you being willing to share your story and nuggets that might help others. So thanks for taking the time.
Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate being asked to come on today.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll see each other in real life at a conference or something sometime soon. Thank you.
I hope so. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like what you heard, tell a friend, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a rating and review. It makes a huge difference in helping others like you find us. If you'd like to learn more about our education and coaching programs, head over to everythingcoworking.com. We'll see you next week.